Welcome back to Happy Porch Radio, the digital agency podcast for progressive agency owners and web professionals. Season 4 is an exploration of diversity in our industry, especially gender diversity. This season, your host, Barry O'Kane, is joined by some wonderful co-hosts for conversations with agency leaders and diversity and inclusion experts.
Welcome back to Happy Porch Radio Season 4. This episode, my co-host Kelly and I are joined by the very inspirational Hilary Stevenson. Hilary is Managing Director at Sigma UK, and Sigma are a leading specialist in user experience consulting and design, information management and web technologies. She is also a role model and a facilitator at Diversity Role Models, which is a charity that actively seeks to prevent homophobic, biphobic and transphobic bullying in United Kingdom schools. So let's meet Hilary.
I'm Hilary Stevenson. I'm the founder and managing director of Sigma Consulting Solutions. We are a digital agency focused on user experience and digital inclusion.
Welcome to Happy Porch Radio.
Thank you for having me.
And we're also joined today again by the wonderful Kelly, who's joining me as co-host again.
Hello, welcome everyone.
Hilary, tell me a little bit more about Sigma and the work you do.
Sure. We're, a digital agency, and because of our work, we do everything from design right the way through to development and support. But we have a very real focus on user experience, and that means most of our projects, if not everything, is informed by real people. So we interview, we survey, we do usability testing with the real users of our clients. So it's quite interesting work. It's very rewarding work, particularly when you're looking at people who are digitally excluded or have perhaps lower digital confidence levels. So it's good work. We probably work more in the sort of information-rich web space, so less on the kind of branding and commerce side. We do have some expertise there, but really we're working with kind of thornier problems or interfaces that are a bit more complex, or where the audience is really quite broad in terms of skill set and access needs.
Wonderful. And that, as you know, this season of the podcast is all about, or broadly about, diversity and inclusion. And what you just described is one of the reasons we really wanted to have this conversation. So the work, you touched on a couple of things there about maybe inclusion or exclusion and people with an accessibility. Can you talk to, just describe a little bit more about, I guess, what you mean when you say those words and the type of work that actually is in real life?
Sure. So I guess accessibility is the more narrow discipline. It's, you know, making sure that systems can be accessed by people with varying abilities. They might be cognitive, they might be physical, they might be neurodiverse conditions. We're designing increasingly for people who are on a kind of spectrum of confidence levels and cognitive load. I think for us, though, digital inclusion is much broader. So it starts to touch on things like financial exclusion and, you know, education, what people have used in their careers, and how you then start to show them the value of the internet. So it isn't just a let's sit down and build things the right way or train people to use a computer. It's actually trying to dig around the reasons people don't feel confident or don't see any meaning in the internet. I think in this country, we're still 1 in 5 people excluded from the internet, and some of that is by choice. You know, they're quite anti; they don't see the value in it. So, yeah, it's quite broad for us, and it means we get access to working with audiences with very specific wants and likes and behaviours.
And one of the things that stood out to me is that you started the description about Sigma as about putting the user first, and the research and the sort of discovery process a little bit that you described there, rather than saying, you know, we've got a solution, we've got a magic wand, we will include you, but it's more about working with the person. Is that a fair characterization of what you were saying?
Yeah, I think things have evolved since we started the company. We've been trading for, I think, 11 years now. And I think we used to use the phrase putting the user at the heart of everything we do. And that was well-intentioned, but we've seen probably in the last few years that, you know, that implies a sense of privilege. It implies a sense of, you know, we are helping the user to understand and make sense of their world, which is really not the way to go about things. You know, the whole concept of designing with and, you know, kind of releasing some of your power and privilege to understand what, you know, what is meaningful to other people, and getting into situations where it's easier for them to describe what they will and won't do. I think things have become a lot more sophisticated in the last few years. I guess, Kelly, you've probably seen the same. You know, it's you have to go where the users are and use the language that they feel comfortable with. And that's quite a skill for people who are, you know, who do have a certain education level and do have certain design or development skill.
Do you think that is, or how different do you think when you're working with a specific focus on trying to include people or that type of work, how different do you feel that is from, I'm trying not to make the question sound as if, like, you know, it's different work from mainstream, or I guess that is what the question, what's the difference between what you're describing there with that type of audience or that type of focus versus what maybe we should as an industry be doing anyway?
Yeah, you're right. It implies that people are getting it wrong and aren't doing it in the way that we do it, and that in itself is arrogant. That's not my intention. I just think you need to learn certain skills around research and empathy, if that's not too cheesy. You know, just trying to understand context and meaning and behavior and confidence. So for us, it's probably meant that we've changed the skill set of our team somewhat. So we've brought in people who aren't from a digital background at all, people who have come from more of a social psychology, social science academic background, or people who've really researched user behavior, so that we've invested quite a lot in that research part of our business. And even though I said I don't want to be dismissive of the work of others, I do think there's a kind of lighter touch user experience approach that other people take, which is maybe more focused on kind of interface level interactions, you know, conversion rate optimization, making sure that the UX is built into the system, but it's very much focused on kind of data points rather than human behavior, if that's not too woolly a description. You know, really understanding what makes people tick is a psychology discipline, I think.
Yeah, that's definitely something that makes Sigma stand out way and beyond other digital agencies that I've come across, certainly. I guess one of the questions around that is, how do you go about building a diverse team? Because some of the projects that you work on and for the people that you're working on for are so, so broad and so diverse. Does that change how you, I mean, obviously it does change how you look at your recruitment process and the people and the skills that you need to bring into the organization?
It does. And I think previously I've described it as, you know, you need to take a risk or you need to have a leap of faith. But even that's probably the wrong language, because it's not actually, it hasn't been risky to us to bring in people from different backgrounds. That might be different educational levels. It might be people, as I say, who've come from a very different industrial background, who couldn't design, they couldn't use Photoshop to save their lives. They never want to code. These are people who want to understand people and situations, and we've had to do that. So similarly, we've had to bring in people with different skill sets in terms of their own abilities. And again, that hasn't really been a risk. It's added quite a lot to the team. But it means from a HR perspective and an employment perspective, you do need to think differently about, you know, your job ads. So relaxing things around, you know, people must have a business IT degree. We ditched that. I mean, you know, when we looked at it, we thought, why are we asking for that? Because everybody else always does on a job ad. So yeah, you do need to change things, and you need to probably revisit your policies and procedures, even down to the environment level, to working patterns, to, you know, flexible working, to mentoring. You have to look at all of those things, I think, in a modern business.
And that's an approach that you take at Sigma, isn't it? I know that a percentage of your team do work from home, or you do flexible working
I would be lying if I said that was kind of by design. It was more to do with when we started the business, it was, who do I want to work with? You know, where are they based? Oh, they don't live near me, but it's probably more important that we have the right people on board to build a company than it is to have them all sit in one office location. So I don't think we were early adopters, but we always had people who were 100% based from home right from the get-go. And it wasn't because we couldn't afford an office. It was genuinely about having the right people and the right talent in the team. So we've maintained that. And it isn't always easy. You know, people work together when they are together, but we've managed to find a way of, you know, getting that remote collaboration up and running as well.
Yeah, brilliant. I love the fact that that's tied to the work you do as well. So just to sort of There were so many things there that I want to sort of dig into a couple of them. One is talking about the recruitment process. You mentioned about some specifics about, you know, in what requirements you put into job ads and things like that. Is there anything else in terms of the recruitment process that you have learned or that Sigma are applying to try and improve the diversity and the strength of your team?
There are a couple of things. We try to do more through our network, which is still hard. You still need occasional support from the recruitment world, but we try to build our reputation through networking, through running events, through, you know, running things with local colleges. We've got some great relationships with universities. We run an annual event, Camp Digital, where we bring a lot of junior and young graduate talent to the day. So that, I think that's been quite useful for us. So we're kind of looking in different places and building the network and reputation so people have a good feel for who Sigma is and, you know, what we stand for. There are other more practical things that we've done. We've looked at the wording of our job adverts. As I say, we've relaxed some of the traditional standards around educational levels in favour of richer life experience. There's a thing out there called, I think it's a gender decoder. I'll get you the link, Barry, because I can never remember it. But I think Kelly...
Yes, I've used that myself. Yeah. I think on your recommendation,
I don't know. It's academically researched, so I think it has some weight. But Kelly and I have spoken about it. It's just a way to check yourself. It's a way to just check the language of... if what we're using, and as we evolve, even, you know, the concept of binary, is it targeted towards male or females, even that's changing the language we use now. And I think as business managers, we need to take some responsibility for that and look at things at that level. So we've changed the way that we write job ads and we've changed where we place those job ads as well.
And the link to Gender Decoder, I will include that in the show notes on Happy Porch Radio, so listeners can go and check it out. So as well as doing those, the process you just described, what you mentioned earlier, and I think the word you used was a sort of a risk, or there seems to be a risk associated with some of that. Do you think that, or did you use that as a kind of, that was a perception at the start, or what was that risk that you were seeing there?
I think it was breaking out of the sort of traditional comfort zone of, you know, what is a developer, what is a designer, where should they have come from, will their CV show? We needed to break that mold a little bit, and again, the language isn't right, but take more of a chance on people who've maybe got a different life story. So bring people into the team who are brilliant with people and brilliant in front of our clients, but they don't have the traditional path towards being a researcher or a designer. That's working well for us. Bringing in age diversity, you know, just simple things like, you know, not always looking at the kind of, we've got our mids, we've got our seniors, we need to backfill with junior talent. Taking more of a diverse approach and looking at people who are maybe in the upper age bands because they've got fantastic experience to add to a team and sadly maybe overlooked, particularly women returning to their careers. You know, we know that's a problem after childcare. So yeah, just having those considerations in mind when we're looking to add new members to the team.
What is it that you're looking for, Hilly? Because this is quite a different approach to recruitment in terms of, you know, you're not looking for the standard things. Like you said, you're not looking for the IT degree and that's not essentially as important to you anymore. What would you say is important when you're looking over people's CVs and what they can bring?
It's a very good question. and I think, you know, I don't want to dismiss the importance of technology to our business. I've got a DevOps team out there. If they hear this back, they might be like, oh, what's she talking about? My experience of technology is that it can be trained in very quickly. You know, it's so democratized. It's, you know, it's so pervasive. People who are interested in working with tech tend to invest a lot of their own time in doing that. So I worry less about, you know, the technical upskilling of the team than I do about the sort of personal and cultural fit, and are they going to be good with clients? Are they going to be good with users? Do they care? You know, do they care about the things that we as a company say we care about? So, you know, do they want to win over hearts and minds when it comes to inclusion? If they do, then they're going to score quite highly when you start talking to them.
Some of the other episodes in this season, we've had really interesting conversations about that and the sort of biases and that kind of thing, which I think is really fascinating. What was interesting for me that's why I picked out the word risk, because that's something that I've definitely been through journeys of like perceiving something as a risk and then actually I know this is an entirely internal process for me, probably, to be able to say, well, actually, no, that's not right. I'm actually, there's opportunity here,
yeah.
both for the business and for those individuals. I'm thinking, like, exactly like you mentioned, people returning who maybe are really good with people, more experienced, more comfortable, more confident in pressure situations and that kind of stuff, and upskilling in whatever the relevant technical skills or updating technical skills actually is an easier mountain to climb than that broader skill set. So how would you, thinking about another part of that, you mentioned sort of backfilling and junior stuff and so on, how would you go about advising a team, say a small team and a small agency who are looking to recruit slowly and are looking to, but also want to at the same time improve the diversity and the strength of the team there? Where would you sort of, you know, a few pointers you might give them to where to start or things to start thinking about?
I think maybe look in places where you haven't looked before. There's a great community, certainly in the UK now, around coding clubs, around maybe women in tech initiatives, boot camps, software development apprenticeships, you know, where people maybe haven't come through the traditional route, but they've chosen or made a commitment to picking up technical skills. And I think we've found some really interesting people through those routes. So, you know, get yourself out there to networking groups that maybe aren't the traditional business breakfast type things where you go and pitch at each other and try and work out, you know, who's going to try and sell something first. You know, just go to places where the audience is slightly different. I think that's been quite useful for us. Maybe take your time a little bit, you know, try and build up a rapport with people over time so that you know that the fit is there. And that might be engaging with people while they're at university, maybe bringing them in on internships over the summer. That's worked really well for us. We've had a number of people who've done work experience maybe for 1 or 2 weeks, and then they've come back for a day per week in their final year at uni, and then they've joined as a graduate. And yeah, they might move on after 2 years, but we've had a really good run with those people. So just consider those options working quite well for us, I hope.
That idea about being open, that people are going to move on as well, that I think in the past we've felt quite nervous about that, about how difficult it is to find people in the first place and then bring them in. And then, you know, 2 years can actually seem like a really short amount of time before they're off again. But I think that it's understanding that that's the way it is now, and be happy that they'll move on and you've got that time with them is maybe the best approach to looking at that now.
Yeah, and you've got to kind of be very mature about that. I don't know what you were like, Kelly, but I'll be completely honest. When people used to leave, I hated it. I used to think that they were terribly disloyal, and, you know, what have I done? What can they possibly not love about being here? And you really used to kind of agonize over, did we get the mentoring right? Did we overpromise? You know, it really used to kill me. And now I'm just a lot more relaxed about it, because it's just the nature of a very fast-paced industry. You know, it's a very hot market. People get headhunted, particularly with young people who don't have, you know, kind of commitments like mortgages. They're going to go, and that's fine. And I think we've stayed in touch with a lot, and some have become clients, you know, in their new roles. So that's a better way to do it than the kind of old, you know, you're dead to me, don't ever knock on my door again. And I would like that.
A better approach.
Yeah, I think so.
That's brilliant. I love it. I have the same thing about clients as well. If a client or a contract ends, you know, you always want to, even when it's hard, leave the door open.
It is hard, because we're proud, aren't we? We're proud of the work that we've done and the companies that we've built. So when people seem to kind of turn their backs on us, it is quite tricky. But yeah, you've just got to toughen up.
Maybe they come back, though. If you leave that door open, there's quite a few that come back.
So I also want to go back and touch on something else you mentioned, and you touched on flexible work or sort of remote-ish, which is something that's very close to or a strong passion of mine. Can you talk a little bit, and then you said that sort of just happened. Can you talk a little bit more about how that just happened and the sort of impact of it?
Sure. So when we started the company, some of us had worked together at a previous agency. When we were owned by a Swedish parent company, I was given a lot of freedom to establish the business in the UK, to build my own team, to design the services that we wanted to offer and pick the clients that we wanted to focus upon. So for me, as I said, it was just about picking an initial handful of people around me that I knew I could trust, some of whom I'd worked before. So I really didn't care about where they were based. So we've got, you know, still to this day, our commercial director lives in Newcastle. I'm based in Manchester. Our HR manager is in Devon. you know, it is genuinely that widespread. I mean, the UK is not a big country when it comes to getting around. It's expensive to get around the UK, but in terms of time, you can manage it. And the tools we have at our disposal in the digital world means that there's no excuse for not offering that flexibility and balance. And I think it pays off. I think people do appreciate that. You know, I don't practice any hard and fast rules around flexi time. We offer flexi time, but we allow people to manage it themselves. You know, I don't have cameras in people's offices. That is coming. People are doing that, but that would to me seem very, very strange. So there's a lot of trust that you have to have in your culture. But it works. And even now, even though the people who are office based, even if they only live 5 minutes down the road, invariably they've got a day from home per week so that, you know, they can plan things around. It just sort of works for us. I've never known it be a significant problem in the business. Nobody has said, I can't get hold of that person, or I wish they were here more, or it doesn't work because they're never in the office. It's genuinely not been an issue. But some people are frightened of offering it still.
Yeah, for me, that's mind-blowing. We are 100% remote, don't have an office. So I feel really strongly about that and how important it is. But the reason, from the point of view of this conversation, because there is a black hole of conversation, I could disappear down there very quickly. But from the point of view of this conversation, what I think is incredibly powerful or very relevant is, like we touched on, for example, people returning to work or people with different backgrounds and different needs, building in the flexibility into the team, I think actually enables or empowers, or maybe what I mean is it should enable and empower that team to be stronger because it allows you to do the more of the diversity part. So what I was interested in, the other part I'm interested in what you're describing there is, do you feel that has... You know, that kind of came out because you wanted to work with these people and it's just kind of happened. Do you think that also has any impact on some of this, the conversations around understanding accessibility and inclusion and the diversity of the team?
I think it does. I think, you know, I don't want to kind of share too much about the makeup of our team, but there are people who have specific needs within our team or health challenges that means that having the ability to flex your hours, to flex your location, to work part-time, to do other things that make their lives, you know, important, you know, to allow them the choice to work outside of Sigma is a bold move for some maybe, but I think it's really helped us. So, you know, I've never had any kind of, we don't have moonlighting clauses in our contracts. We have some kind of advisory notes around what it means when you're here versus when you're not here and working on other things. But I've never been strict around saying you can't have a separate business interest or outside projects, because those things make people tick along and they need them. And they know when there's a conflict of interest, and people know when they're taking the mickey, don't they? So it's all very self-managed, I think.
That's really interesting what you said about the kind of outside projects or, you know, things that people have got going on outside of the Sigma world. That's something that comes up quite a lot with us as well, because we have everyone that works in the company is really creative. And I think creative people need different outlets. You know, for me, don't laugh, but I crochet. That's my creative outlet.
Wow.
But that's what works for me. But other people that we've had in the team have been, you know, they're really good at illustrating, for example. So they might have set up a kind of illustration business where they were selling cards. And we've always really actively encouraged things like that, because I think that, again, helps the team to be more creative and more diverse.
And absolutely. And if you get the culture right, they will name check you. You know, they will appreciate that they're doing that. And when the situation is appropriate, they will tie things back to Sigma or to Rubber Cheese. And we know that because we know that they care about the brand and being associated with it. So, yeah, you need to be relaxed around those things. And there are things in the contracts around poaching staff and poaching clients when people leave, because that's just standard business practice. But I don't think we've ever had to enforce any of that or worry about that kind of thing. But yeah, touch wood.
And it will definitely bring the broader benefits that you're describing there. I mean, it's just more stronger, more variable, stronger team. It's everything's better. And then that leads into the work. It's just it's like a virtuous cycle.
There is a bit of trust there. I think because that trust is there, they'll know that I will say to them, you look really tired. What have you been doing? So but it kind of, we have that rapport. If I do think things are getting in the way of work, I don't mind having that conversation with people.
And that is an appealing thing for people who are looking to work, you know, looking for places to work as well, looking for a change. So I just wanted to change tracks very slightly, Hilary, and ask you a little bit about your background. What led you to Sigma, and why, why an interest in this type of work?
Yeah, my background is I studied English at university, and I knew I wanted to write, but I didn't want to teach, and I didn't want to be a journalist. And I got involved in copywriting and technical editing purely because there was a science park just down the road from where my mum and dad lived, and I needed a job. So I got involved in, I think, quite early stage user-centered design by writing things about systems. So I was always involved with users, either because we were writing training content for them, or we were documenting systems that they were using, or I was helping to make sense of quite scientific or statistical reports for the layman audience. So I think kind of UX for me stemmed from that. It wasn't called that then, but I was very involved in kind of technical communication and user-centered design from that job onwards. And then I went agency side. So rather than working in-house for one product set, I went agency side, and then have remained in that kind of environment. So I've worked through documentation manager roles, project managers, delivery managers, until I was fortunate enough to be asked to set up my own company and set up a company on behalf of Sigma. And when I did that, UX, as I say, wasn't really known as a term. We were just on the cusp of usability and kind of HCI merging and becoming more UX oriented, so that, you know, the domain knowledge that we had in usability and accessibility was really timely. And that said, I still think a lot of people aren't practicing accessibility enough, but it's been a really, really solid thread throughout our trading history. So, you know, it's great that we're still known for doing that kind of thing, and that we're seen as, you know, having some expertise around inclusion.
And I also know that you do, outside of Sigma, that there's that you're involved in. Well, I'll let you sort of share a little bit of what you're involved in that's outside of the work, you know, all that amazing spare time.
I have a young family, so that keeps me a little bit busy. But I do some voluntary work, and I'm not doing that, oh, my charity stuff. I've been engaged with a charity called Diversity Role Model since they started, and it's been hugely rewarding. And it has ties to what I do here around inclusion and you know, thinking about diversity and language. But it's essentially, they're a charity that go into schools with LGBT plus allies or LGBT plus community members, and we share our stories for primary school children right the way up to sort of sixth form, and in some cases trainee student teachers. And it's really built my own confidence. It isn't necessarily about giving them a lot of time. I can only do what I can do, but it's really helped me think about my own story and my own background, and just how different people's lives are, you know, really thinking about, you know, different histories. And it's been amazing. I would urge anybody to check them out, because they do brilliant work, and I've been very proud to help them. And Sigma looks after their website as well, I should say, so we're quite closely involved with the charity.
And I guess, I mean, it's so positive for them, for you to be able to go in as a role model into those schools and really showcase, you know, where you've come from and what you do now. I think that's fantastic.
I think so. I mean, my life's been great, and I haven't had any problems. But when you hear the stories of other people, you start to think about, you know, just how hard it's been, particularly, you know, friends that I've made in the trans community who are maybe older people, and their career history. When you hear what's happened to them, you just think, wow, how have these people made it through? And for young people to hear about that, I think is really vital, particularly in, you know, today's political climate. So I think it must inform what I've been doing here at work in the last 3 years as well, in terms of thinking about richer life experience. It must have had an impact.
That's something that I hear a lot, actually, is exactly what you just said, is that it's a two-way street. Like, taking part in something like that is valuable to you as well as the amazing value that you're offering, because, you know, to young kids as well. And then tying that back to the work you do.
Anybody that, if you get a chance to volunteer, I mean, I'm lucky that I'm able to do it, and some of the team get to volunteer for other charities as well. But I think it's just hugely rewarding. It really does help you understand what life means to other people. So if you can do it, if you can sponsor it as a corporate, then fantastic. But if you can give people time to do it as well, that's really good.
So that's diversityrolemodels.org. Again, we'll link to that in the
Thank
show
you.
Notes.
They'll appreciate that, I'm sure.
definitely worth checking out. So I just wanted to dig a little bit deeper. So it's going into schools and doing workshops and talks. Is that right? right? Can you tell me a little bit more about the actual work?
Yeah, it's a really easy format. They go into schools, they do a lesson, a workshop per lesson, and you have a facilitator. There's always a member of the teaching staff in the classroom, and they'll have two or three role models stand up and just share their stories for 5 minutes. So just tell their backgrounds, whether it's their family, their identity, their sexuality. They'll talk about their jobs, they'll talk about their hobbies, and it just gives young people exposure to things that maybe they're not hearing about at home, or they're not hearing about in school. It gives the teachers a huge amount of confidence as well around the language that people are using in schools. Teachers kind of get quite a lot out of it as well. We've had governors sit in the workshops and kind of well up by the end of the session because they know that this is something that they now need to encourage in the school. So yeah, really, really rewarding. And it's everybody under that kind of LGBT+ banner, whether they're family members, whether they're colleagues, or whether they've had experiences themselves. So it's really interesting.
Pattern I've noticed a lot actually in with people who are in leadership roles or founders of agencies that also have a passion or an interest in the broader something like diversity, inclusion and accessibility, like you touched on, that they're also like, it's a very complete rounded thing in life. It's not just this, that's what we do at work. And I'm really interested to see if you think that sort of mindset, that the sort of, you know, complete life experience thing is something that also allows you to sort of encourage and build that trust within the team. So instead of saying, you know, you must be in the office for minute by minute, I'm going to measure everything you do, you're interested in the broader who they are as well.
I think so. I mean, I know other members in the team have outside interests just like the one I've just described, and I think it does make them rounder individuals as well. And I am interested. So we know that some of the team volunteer for homeless charities, and that meant a couple of years ago we got involved in the Homeless Hack movement in Manchester because I thought this is something that people are engaged in outside of work. Maybe we can help to bring that back in, and as a company we can get behind something that has a slightly bigger impact. So I think you should always be aware of what people are doing, providing you're not prying. And the other thing it brings as well is, I mean, we've talked a lot about, you know, I talked earlier about getting people to care about the things that we stand for. I don't want that to be kind of one kind of homogenized, everybody at Sigma looks and thinks and believes the same things, because then you haven't got diversity. So if your politics have to be the same as my politics, then that kind of defeats the objective of being diverse. So it's a fine line. I think you need to know what else makes people tick outside, but you don't need to try and police it or think, well, actually that clashes with my own beliefs or our corporate culture. It's tricky, I think, to get it right. And I don't know if we do, but we try.
And I think it's the trying, which I think is really the valuable part, like allowing that space to enable people, touching back on flexibility of work and not trying to micromanage every other aspect of their lives in terms of like we touched on some of the work and side projects and things. And I from my point of view, I think that all feeds back into like the reason for an agency to have and build a diverse team isn't just because that's, you know, a thing to do, but because of the fact that's how you make stronger teams, more valuable, more enjoyable workplaces, and therefore produce better work.
I think so. I think sometimes you have to be explicit about why you're doing it. I think that's quite important. So it isn't enough to just, you know, people in the team will be like, oh, look, there's Hills out doing some feminism again. or she's banging on about gay people. I think you need to sometimes for some people make an explicit link between why you're doing it and how you think it helps the business that they're part of. Because not everybody just, you know, as I said, some people don't care about those kind of issues. They care about other things. So sometimes you have a responsibility to explain, look, I've signed up to this networking group or I'm on this board because of these reasons. And this is what I hope it will bring back to Sigma.
Yeah, that's really good insight, actually.
Just on that, I think it's nice to actively be encouraging and supporting other people's kind of outside interests. And like you said, you've got members of your team that do volunteering for other charities as well. I think them knowing that you are actively encouraging that as well is a way of, I don't know if you feel that that's a way of actually retaining your team for longer as well. I know recently we've had a member of our team come to us and kind of talk about some of the things that he'd be really keen to do outside of kind of rubber cheese, and we have said back to him, like, you know, we'll support you to do those things, we'll encourage you to do those things, because we know that actually we might get to keep that member of the team for an extra year if we do that kind of thing. So I don't know if you get that as well.
Yeah, we do. And I think it's okay to say that. I think when you're having that discussion, you could say, look, this is what we expect in return. You know, I had a guy that years ago when we first set the business, he'd met somebody who lived in Argentina, and we let him go work out there for a year, which actually was probably a bit crazy. But we did, to be fair, have clients out there that he was doing an excellent job of supporting. But, you know, just giving somebody that space to sort out their personal situation. And he's still with us, you know, his wife now lives over here with him, and little things like that, where you can just relax your kind of, oh, you know, what's the risk to the business? What's it going to cost me? If you can just think differently about those, then I think it's positive in the long run. Similarly for kind of long-term travel, you know, it's particularly popular. I don't want to be kind of generalist, but we have seen a change in kind of graduates joining then maybe after 1 or 2 years. They want to travel because they didn't do it before university, and I think there's a way we can allow that and hang on to them a little bit longer.
Really interesting and very amazing conversation. Thank you so much. Unfortunately, we're starting to run out of time, so I wanted to finish up on what's happening next, Hilary, for you and for Sigma. Do you have a vision of where you're going to take things from now?
Yeah, even though I've talked a lot about people working remotely, we have just redesigned our studio. So we do have an office, and we've just really invested in crazily, we're a UX-focused organization, and we never designed our own space, our own environment. We just added desks as we added people. So we've changed that up. We moved in last week. So it's the same office, but a very different feel to it. I'm really interested to see what impact that's going to have, both on the current team and also our ability to hire people into the team, whether the environment has a positive effect there. I think when it comes to our services and our kind of tech focus, then I think we've got to start embracing inclusion and usability around kind of modern tech. So we're getting more involved in, you know, conversations around chat and voice and sensor-based technology, you know, the kind of smart home, smart building stuff. So, and then inclusive service design, we've seen fantastic investment in public sector digital teams over the last few years. You know, there's some amazing people working in the public sector, and we're trying to do more and more with them to bring some of the kind of usability and accessibility things that we've done in the private sector into the public sector, which bizarrely everybody thinks the public sector gets accessibility right because it's legally required to do so, but it doesn't. So we're branching out into that.
Outstanding. That's really exciting stuff. And very, very finally, for anybody listening who wants to find out more about you or learn more about Sigma, where should they go?
Okay. We are Sigma on Twitter. So, and then I am Hilary Online on Twitter because it was just a really lazy way to set up my account. So it's very easy to find me. I can't promise there's quality on there, but yeah, that's where I am.
Awesome. Thank you so much. We'll share those and all the links we've talked about on the show. Thank you so much, Hilary. Really appreciate your time today.
Pleasure to speak to you both. You take care.
You can get all the links and notes from this episode on happyporchradio.com, where you can also find out how to send us questions, feedback, and get involved in the conversation about this series. If you enjoyed the show, please share with anyone else who might enjoy it too. Thanks for listening.